who is my mother's namesake. So both of these lessons, these characters from the Bible, have always been of interest to me. I had studied Ruth in the past and preached lessons on her before, but I dug back into the book and I believe discovered some new things that were at least new to me, and I hope this will be a blessing to you. The story of Ruth is one of the most beautiful of all stories, not just among the stories of the Bible. But those who evaluate literature have recognized in this book that it is a most beautiful story of all stories that have ever been written. It is a story about love and loyalty. It is also a great picture of what I believe is God's ideal for womanhood. But I looked at it in another sense as well, and we'll notice some of that near the end of the lesson, that I believe God's ideal of manhood is presented in this book as well, and we certainly wouldn't want to overlook that. It is a book that has been read for thousands of years, and incidentally, if you like to read and like shorter books than longer ones, this one can be read in about 15 minutes. So as brief as it is, I'm amazed at just how much it contains. It has been read for a long time and kind of is a supplement to the book of Judges, which precedes it in the Bible. The book of Judges tells us the events in the lives of the leaders of God's people in those days. The book of Ruth really is a book that opens the door on the common everyday Israelite in the same time and gives us the other side of that story and gives us information that we enjoy reading about. Especially, I think, in contrast to the things that are written in the book of Judges. It opens its pages on the life of a modest, pious Israelite family. It gives us a look at their laws of inheritance better than any other part of the Bible. And it presents, as I indicated, the ideal man in Boaz, as well as the ideal woman in Ruth. Boaz is a man of great wealth and distinction. He's a man of industry and courtesy and liberality and great faith in God. And Ruth is a woman of loyalty and purity and sacrificial love. And in sort of contrast to Boaz, she has a faith in God, but it's a new faith to her. And so it's kind of interesting to see how that develops. But it's also a book that gives us a glimpse into the ancient ancestry of Jesus Christ. The book begins, and if you'd like to have turned to that, we're going to be kind of telling the story of the book of Ruth, and then at the end we will notice some things that we learn about this about the people in the book. It begins, as it indicates in the first verse, in the days when the judges ruled. So this would have been between the time that Joshua led the armies of Israel in to conquer the land of Canaan and the time when Samuel anointed Saul to be the first king of Israel. The story begins by focusing on the life of one family from the city of Bethlehem. The husband's name is Elimelech, and his wife's name is Naomi. And they have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And the first thing that we are told is that there is a famine in the land of Israel, and especially in the area of Bethlehem. Now, this could very well have been God's doing, because we know that at this time God had told Israel when Moses was alive that if they served him faithfully, he would bless them, but if they turned away from him, then they could expect things like this famine to occur. And so it could have been what the result of God. There are hints of that in this book, but nothing direct. But Elimelech decides to take his family out of the land, and they go about 60 miles towards the southeast, the other side of the Jordan River and the Dead Sea, to a land called Moab. And it is there that he thinks he can provide for his family. Now, this decision, I believe, has several things wrong with it. For instance, if this was an act of God, a punishment upon them for their sins, Deuteronomy 28 would have told them what they should have done was repent of their sins and serve God more faithfully, not to have left the land. But it also shows in Elimelech a degree of lack of faith in God to provide for him. I suppose there's some irony in the fact that he left the city of Bethlehem, a name which means the house of bread, and took his family to a place called Moab, a name that means waste and nothing. But that is the meaning of those places. And the people of Moab were idolaters. They served other gods. And their sons were had grown up to a near adult age, I believe, and would soon be looking for wives. And in that family, they would be therefore looking for wives among those idolatrous people. And that was something that he should have considered. The Bible indicates in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah that the Moabites were not to be entered into marriages by the Israelites. It may have been because of this wrong that tragedy soon struck the family. For the Bible tells us that Elimelech had fled Israel because of the famine, didn't want to die there, but he died very quickly in the land of Moab, what he thought for him would have been the land of plenty. But after that, both Mahlon and Chilion married Moabite women. Their names are given in the book as Orpah and Ruth. Now, Naomi, the wife, kept her family there in Moab for 10 years, the Bible says. And during that 10 years, both of her sons also died. And so this is a strange occurrence. And Naomi grieved very deeply for her losses that she faced and the situation that she was now presented with. Soon, the Bible tells us that Naomi learns that the famine is over back at her home. And the Bible explains it by saying she had heard that God had visited his people, which to me implies very more directly that the famine could have been caused by God. And so God has now visited his people and the famine is over, so she decides to take herself and go back to that family, to other relatives that are there, and go back to her home in Bethlehem. Now her two daughters-in-law decide that they will go with her, at least for a while. I suppose as far as courtesy would have dictated in those days, they make the journey partway with her. But at one point, Naomi stopped and blessed them both, thinking that they were following her because of the laws concerning marriage at that time. She encourages them to, you need to stay here in Moab. You should find wives in the land of Moab, husbands in the land of Moab there. And so she says to them that she has no more sons and that she could not provide husbands for her if they continued to go with her. But at first, these young women insist that they will go with her back home. But Naomi assures them she has no plans for marriage. It would take too long, if she did, to raise up more sons for them to marry. And so she again pleads with them. And the Bible says they wept together. And Orpah kisses Naomi and returns to her land. But the Bible tells us that Ruth clung to her mother-in-law. And Ruth speaks to Naomi what has become to many people the most precious words of loyalty and love that perhaps have ever been spoken between human beings. She says, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." These words, spoken by a woman to her mother-in-law, have come to be applied to other relationships, and especially to the marriage relationship, because they are so appropriate to that occasion. Naomi sees how strong Ruth's desire to go with her is, and she gives in to her request. And when they arrive back in Bethlehem, the women of the city recognize Naomi, and they come out to meet her, and they say, "Is this Naomi?" And they are happy to see her, but in her grief, she tells them, "Do not call me Naomi any longer." The name Naomi means pleasant. And she says, "Instead, you should call me Mara," a name that means bitter. And she tells why she's making this change. She said, "Because the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me." She says, "I went out full." She was speaking about having a husband and sons. "But I have come back empty because they have all died while she was away." And I don't know if you can imagine the hurt and the sorrow that someone would feel in this situation, that she would literally change her name in the presence of her old friends, not to call her pleasant anymore, but to call her bitter. Now, few people want to be known as a bitter old woman, but here's an example of one who did. And that's the statement for us to understand just how she felt about her losses and at this time. The Bible points out that the time of the year that she made this return was the time of the barley harvest, and that's significant as the story continues. Now, as these two women, Naomi and Ruth, try to set up their lives in this new situation, Naomi remembers that her husband had relatives there in Bethlehem. And there's one, a man of great wealth, who might be helpful to them, and his name is Boaz. Now, Ruth has apparently learned, according to the law of Moses, that it's permissible, if you are poor, to go into the fields, even if they don't belong to you, and to glean after harvesters. After they have taken the crop, whatever might be left in the corners or left dropped on the ground, that they could go and take that for themselves. And she asks Naomi for permission to do that, and she says, go ahead, because she knows they'll soon need some food. And Ruth went out into a field that happened to belong to this man, Boaz. And she asks of the steward there if she can have permission to glean in that field, and it's granted to her. And later when Boaz came by to inspect his workers, he notices Ruth, and he asked about her. And the steward told him, it is the damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And he also was told that she has been working tirelessly all day. Boaz went and spoke to Ruth, and he told her that she should not glean in anyone else's field. Apparently he understood that there's possibility of danger for a strange young woman if she is found in the wrong place. And so she should stay only in the fields where his young women were working. So there were other women there that knew him and that he was protecting them too, possibly, and that she should stay in his field. And he told her that he had told the young men to leave her alone, not to bother her, so she would enjoy a measure of protection there. He also gave her permission to drink from the water that had already been drawn from the well. And she thanked him and asked him why had she found such favor in his eyes. And Boaz told her that he had already heard how faithful and loyal she had been to Naomi in coming back with her and in helping her with finding of food and things. And he also said that he has heard of her desire to leave the country of Moab and to come and belong to the people of Israel. And he gave her a blessing from God. He said, the Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. And so he was a good welcoming committee for this foreigner in this land, by taking these steps to provide for her and for her mother-in-law, who was a relative of his, and he was taking a responsibility to help look after her. Now that afternoon, Boaz invited Ruth to eat the food that he had prepared and brought for his workers, and after she returned back to the fields to work. And Boaz then instructed some of his workers to assist her a little bit, by telling them to drop some of their grain in front of her where she could find it and pick it up. And that evening, after she had beat out the grain that she had gleaned, she took home to Naomi somewhere, for us, between a half bushel and a bushel of grain. And Naomi was surprised to see that much grain brought from one who was gleaning after just one day's work. And she asked about whose field she had worked in, and she said it belonged to a man named Boaz. And Naomi was delighted. And she said, that man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. And so she wanted her to know that. Ruth, of course, filled Naomi in on all the things that had happened that day and how Boaz had blessed her. And Naomi advised Ruth that she should stay in his field and not be found in anyone else's. And so Ruth continued to glean in Boaz's fields until the harvest had come to an end. Now, Naomi soon realizes that this relationship may further be a blessing to Ruth, and so advises her. This blessing would arise from another part of the law of Moses, that concerning inheritances and of marriages where the husband dies not having any children. And realizing that Boaz is a kinsman to Elimelech and therefore also to Elimelech's sons, she teaches this to Ruth, the value of this, that he has an opportunity and a duty to marry Ruth and produce children, according to the teachings of the law of Moses. This first child, of course, would be the one who would inherit Elimelech's possessions that his children would have gotten, but now they've all died. Well, that night was the night of the barley threshing after the harvesting was over, a night that is usually associated with great feasting and eating of a huge meal. And Naomi tells Ruth that she is to wash herself and anoint herself and put on her best garment and go down secretly to the threshing floor after Boaz has eaten, after he has lain down to sleep. And Naomi tells her that she should lie down near his feet and uncover those feet. And she said, when he awakes, he'll speak to you and tell you, and then you can tell him what it is you desire. Now Ruth went and did that night everything accordingly as Naomi had told her to do. And when Boaz did awake, he saw someone lying near his feet. And he said, who are you? And she replied, I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. Now some people have taken these words, I believe, in an inappropriate manner. They have assumed that she was not keeping herself pure any longer, but that is not at all what is being spoken of here, for he will yet call her virtuous. She is merely doing this in order to wake him up. And he will awaken when his feet get cold and reach for the cover and see her lying there and speak to her. And she's not asking to share his bed that night. She's asking for his protection. She's asking for him to do the duty of a near kinsman and marry her. And so that is what is going on here. She was asking for this protection according to the law of Israel. And Boaz blessed her again for her loyalty to Naomi, and in that she did not leave her duty to her and go after the love of the strange young men that would in the area. He told her that he would do as she requested, for everyone knew that she was a virtuous woman. But there was a problem here. Yes, he was a near kinsman to Elimelech, but there is another who is closer, and he has the first right to redeem the possessions of Elimelech and the first right to marry her. And so he says, I will speak to him tomorrow, and we will settle this matter then. And early in the morning, the Bible says, she and Ruth arose and returned to her home with all the grain that she could carry that Boaz had laid on her. And when she got home, she explained to Naomi all that had happened. And Naomi said, well, let's sit here and wait until this matter is settled today, because Boaz will take care of it as soon as possible. And in the morning it happened that Boaz met the man who was the nearer kinsman than he to Elimelech. He called for him to come aside along with 10 of the elders of the city to hold a meeting there at the gate. And he spoke to this man in the presence of these elders, saying, Naomi, that is, come again out of Moab, sell a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it for before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And to this proposal the man agreed and said that he would buy the possessions of Elimelech for himself. But with this news, Boaz tells him, if you buy the possessions, you must also marry Ruth and raise up a child who would be the inheritor of those possessions. And when he heard that, this man refused. He said, lest he harm his own inheritance. And so he surrendered the right of redeemer, the right of kinsman, to Boaz. Well, Boaz immediately announced his intention to buy all that belonged to Elimelech and then consequently his sons. He also announced his desire to marry Ruth and raise up a son to inherit those possessions. The people and the elders of the city called Boaz blessed, and that he might be worthy and famous in Bethlehem. And soon after their marriage, the Lord did bless them with a son. And the women of the city rejoiced with Naomi, saying, Blessed be the Lord which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, and that the name that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. Now Naomi became a nurse unto her grandson, and it was the women of the city who named this child. Interestingly enough, they named the child Obed. Now this Obed is the same as he who is the father of Jesse. And Jesse, of course, is the father of David, the king of Israel. It is indeed a beautiful story. Four chapters. I said you could read the book in about 15 minutes. And it's a good story to know and to remember. But like any Bible story, there's much to be learned from what is told to us there. The theme of our talks this week are on marking those individuals whose examples are worthy of our imitation. And I was delighted as I looked through all the topics that were there that just about every one of them are good examples for us to follow. And here is, of course, a book that has good examples. What could we learn from Naomi? Well, many things perhaps, but let me suggest just one. By returning to her people and to her God after the tragedy of her great loss, put her in a place to receive wondrous blessings and happiness in her old age. How many times have we seen people who are Christians, who have faith in God, but when some great tragedy occurs in their life, they turn their backs on God, and you don't see them worshiping anymore, and they don't seem to have that interest anymore, and they might even blame God for what has happened to them. For a time, Naomi did accuse God of dealing very bitterly with her, but by returning back to God's people, that's what put her in the place where these later blessings in her life could come to her. Had she stayed in Moab, I don't think her life would have turned out the way it had. We can learn a lesson from Orpah, the other daughter-in-law that stayed in Moab. Here is a woman that was satisfied only with tears and kisses from Naomi, and thus she gave up the place that she had, so to speak, half gained already in Israel, and returned back to her native land and pagan gods. What can be learned from this nearest kinsman who is described here in this last chapter? Well, selfishness and caring more for his own interests is what prevented him from accepting responsibilities that the law of Moses placed on him. And because of that, I believe his name is forever blotted out of the Bible. We don't know who he is. And perhaps it's because of what he did that his name was not included in the book. I indicated at the beginning of the lesson that Boaz appears in this book as a great example of what a man should be. And indeed he is. His character appears in wonderful contrast to so many men whose story is told in the Bible, as well as people we could find today. He did not live by the rule that might makes right. That might have been the rule that people a generation ahead of him lived by when the people were conquering the land of Canaan, but now they were settling the land, and a different kind of man is required, and Boaz rises to that occasion. In him we see the perfect example of what God surely intended when he made a man, and you can see it in every aspect of his life. Men today ought to follow this example. But here, in this man, is an often overlooked Israelite who exemplifies greatness in every part of his life. For instance, he shows us how to use wealth to bless the lives of other individuals. Many people assume wealth for themselves, and that's why they acquire it. They want their life to be blessed. But here is a man who has blessings of wealth, and he uses them to bless other people. He also shows us that an employer can have great relations with his workers. And he comes out and he inspects them and he provides water and food for them and he tells them things he wants them to do that would have in their minds perhaps that, well, if we drop some of this grain on the ground for these gleaners, that'll be less income for our employer and we might get less because of that. They don't question his word. They do as he says. He has a good relation with them. He also shows us courtesy in the way he dealt with people, in the way he dealt with that nearest kinsman, we can see it. Also in the way he dealt with women, those who were gleaning in his fields, and especially with Ruth and Naomi. Boaz shows us the unselfish willingness to accept added responsibilities. The nearest kinsman was unwilling to accept them, but Boaz immediately took the responsibility upon himself of providing for others. And he also shows us that true love involves great sacrifice. And here's a man, I believe, in several ways in his life was willing to do that. As you read through the book, incidentally, Boaz's name appears more than Ruth's does, you learn that here's a man who could have many titles attached to his life. It seems that the phrase, a mighty man of wealth, would certainly apply to him, as well as Lord of the harvest, or the master of servants, or the true redeemer, the glorious bridegroom, the giver of life. All of these phrases certainly apply perfectly to Jesus, the perfect man, but in a lesser sense, they're all true in the life of Boaz too. And I think that's good to think about. For he was a man who rose to the occasion no matter what the occasion was, and he was the kind of man that God wanted him to be. What an example to all of us as men. But our focus this morning is on Ruth. And here is a story. No, here is the story of all ages which teaches young girls the true values of life. And I hope all of the girls that are hearing this today or in the future will take notice of these things. The spirit of Ruth and her character are the source of the greatest blessings and true happiness for her. Did you get that? It is her spirit and her character that provide the basis for all of the blessings and happiness that happened in her life. It's not that she was a rich young woman. It's not that she was beautiful. I've heard and read people who referred to her as a beautiful young woman, but the Bible doesn't speak about what she looked like. It only speaks about her character. And it's because of that she received the blessings in her life. Nowhere in all the world have I ever heard of a more beautiful and enduring story of virtuous womanhood. We sometimes go to the book of Proverbs and read there about the virtuous woman, and indeed that is a wonderful description, but that is an idealized description there. In the book of Ruth, we have it actually lived in the life of a young woman. And to me, that gets us a little closer to seeing how it is done, to realize that here is someone who actually lived that way. Ruth shows us the value of converting from false religion to the true religion, that of the true and living God. That beautiful statement that she made in chapter 1 to Naomi, her mother-in-law, was spoken in regards to her conversion, of wanting to come to her people and to her God, and wherever she, in companionship to her, would take her. She wanted to belong to Naomi's people. She wanted to serve the God of Israel, and to do this, she was willing to leave her home, her family, her nation, even her idolatrous worship in order to accomplish this conversion. Ruth's story certainly shows us, as Peter spoke in the house of Cornelius in Acts 10, verse 34 and 35, that God is no respecter of persons, but in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. And to me, that is a kind of the story in a nutshell in itself. Because here is one from another nation who comes to fear God and to work righteousness in her life, and she learns that she can be accepted not only among the people of God, but by God himself. Ruth shows us also the value of true loyalty. She was loyal to her husband. Naomi herself speaks of her gratitude for the kindness that Ruth had shown to her son. And Ruth also was loyal to Naomi. Remember when Orpah left? It was Ruth who decided to go wherever Naomi went and express that loyalty to her directly. Ruth was willing to work to support both herself and her mother-in-law. Even Boaz noticed several times that this was loyalty expressed to Naomi. Ruth was also later loyal to Boaz. She showed this in remaining in his fields throughout the harvest time at his request. She showed this in not spending her time chasing after the young men that were around. She showed this in asking for Boaz to assume the role of redeemer for both her and for Naomi. Ruth also shows us the value of a positive spirit. A positive spirit. She kept such a spirit after the death of her husband. We do not see grief expressed in her life because of that. Not in such a way that it is expressed with Naomi. She also maintained a good attitude when Orpah left both her and Naomi alone to stay in that land and not make the journey to Israel. She used her positive attitude to help Naomi to revive her spirit upon returning to Bethlehem, even though at that time she was feeling the losses very, very strongly in her life. She did not sit idly by in Bethlehem, but got up and went to work to provide for their needs. She demonstrated a great positive spirit. Ruth also shows us the value of godly living. Probably Elimelech's family had demonstrated this, at least to some degree, in her presence while they were still in the country of Moab. It was this lifestyle of this family from Bethlehem that no doubt first influenced Ruth and created in her a desire to know more about the true God that they served. She also demonstrated her godly life before Boaz by her purity of conduct. She allowed her character to attract him. And he certainly was attracted by it, wasn't he? It was her character that attracted Boaz, not other things. Not loose living, not going after the young men and trying to have fun with them. But by her purity of character, she attracted the man named Boaz. He heard of her virtue from the steward and spoke of it to others. Ruth shows us the value of godly living with total disregard to the circumstances of the world around her. And that is important, to realize that it can be done. No matter how bad the world gets, we can still live a godly life. Ruth shows us the value of virtue. It is certainly true that the happiness that she enjoyed was due completely to the virtue of her godly life. We cannot forget that fact. To me, for young girls to learn a lesson today, that is the one to learn. The value of virtue, the happiness that she received in her life came to her because she was a virtuous woman and she was following the way of God. Ruth's great example of a virtuous life has given her many rewards. There was, of course, the marriage to Boaz and the soon birth of a baby boy, Obed. But she also enjoyed the great reward of being added to the genealogical record of Jesus Christ. Something that in her day, of course, she wouldn't have had any clue about. But in the Bible today, we read, going back in time, reading the story of thousands of years ago and realize what a great blessing it was that she received this. The Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 1 of this association that she is in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. What a great blessing that is. Obed, her son, was the father of Jesse, the father of King David, from whom Jesus descended. She is truly the most distinguished representative of her nation. The Bible tells us the name of a few other people from Moab, but who has the distinction of being the greatest representative other than her? And interestingly enough, only two books in the Bible are named after a woman, and one of them is hers. As I studied the book of Ruth, I discovered, I think, something else that was new to me. When I looked at Boaz and Ruth, I think I saw in them types of Christ and the church. By that I mean that they pictured, thousands of years before the church came, what the church would be like in Boaz's character and in Ruth's character. And in the few minutes that I have left, let me see how much of this I can cover. Both Boaz and Jesus were, of course, from the tribe of Judah, and both were from the city of Bethlehem. Both Boaz and Jesus possessed an interest in Gentiles. Boaz's own mother was a Gentile. If you look very carefully in the Bible, you'll find that Rahab of Jericho was his mother. And of course, he married Ruth from Moab. Jesus also showed an interest in his lifetime to certain Gentiles, the centurion servant, the Syrophoenician woman's daughter. Both Boaz and Jesus made provisions for Jews and Gentiles alike. Boaz, Ruth and Naomi would fill that bill. But with Jesus, he spoke in John chapter 10 of having other sheep to be added to these sheep so that in the future there would be one fold. Both Boaz and Jesus were magnanimous in their giving of gifts. When Ruth went back home from that night spent there on the granary floor, he gave her as much grain as she could carry. And how many times we see Jesus magnanimously blessing people around him. When he fed 5,000 people, there were 12 baskets full of food left over. It wasn't a skimpy meal. There was plenty for everyone. And both Jesus and Boaz were providers of protection. Boaz, of course, protected Ruth from the other young men that were around. Jesus taught, "Neither shall any man pluck them out of my Father's hand." So protection can be seen in both. Both Boaz and Jesus were providers of food and water. Boaz gave both of these things to Ruth, and Jesus gave these things to thousands. Both Boaz and Jesus were overseers of a harvest. Boaz, the harvest of his own fields. Jesus, of course, oversees the spiritual harvest of the whole world. Both Boaz and Jesus received pleas for favors. Ruth's plea for protection and marriage, and Jesus received pleas for by the thousands for people to be healed. Both Boaz and Jesus became redeemers. Boaz for the property that belonged to Elimelech, and of course, Jesus is the great redeemer for all the world. You can also see similarities in Ruth and the church, for both left their home behind when they came to God. Ruth left her land and her family. Christians are to leave our old man behind when we are buried in Christ, Romans 6, verse 6. Both Ruth and the church are virtuous in their characters. Ruth chapter 3, verse 11, "All the city of my people knows that you are a virtuous woman," Boaz said to her. And the church is to have this being without blemish and without spot, Ephesians 5, 27. Both Ruth and the church were not promiscuous in conduct. Ruth was, it's said several times in the book, and the Bible teaches us to keep ourselves pure as well. Both Ruth and the church sought the people of God. Acts chapter 9, verse 26, Saul tried to join himself to the church there in Jerusalem, as Ruth, of course, in coming out of her country to Israel did. Both Ruth and the church believe in the true God. Ruth, of course, did. She expressed that faith in Ruth 1:16, and in Hebrews 11:6, without faith, it's impossible for us to please God. And Ruth and the church took Jehovah as their true God. Ruth chapter 4, verse 13 speaks of her loyalty to God, and the church is to be loyal to God as well. Isn't it wonderful to find such themes as Christ and His church in the stories of the Old Testament? Jesus said to the Jews in His day, "Search the Scriptures. These are they which testify of Me." Thank you.